You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. The Palace will close for the Pistons tonight, Detroit's final home game at the venue they've played in since the 1988-89 season. It's going to be a little emotional, and the bar is set high. I hope some of you watch the final game at Joe Louis Arena yesterday, the ceremony after. The Red Wings did an amazing, amazing job with that. It'll be a tough act for the Pistons to follow, but this is their chance to put their best on display. The Palace has meant a lot of different things to a lot of people over the years. The biggest, I believe, is the fact that it was privately financed. Then an era where team owners are asking cities that can't afford it for millions and millions of dollars to fund these arenas that largely just help these billionaire owners get more money. Bill Davidson built his own arena. He paid for it himself. He built it himself. And the Pistons benefited from it. Davidson benefited from it. And I believe the city of Detroit benefited from it, not having to pay out, not having to pay for this arena. That's what this always mean to me. It was such a pure thing. This is how business should work. Private people, free from government interference and intervention, trying their best to turn a profit. And Davidson did it. The Palace helped do it. And it allowed the city of Detroit government, in theory, to focus on governing better. That's what the Palace will always mean to me. That's the biggest significant impact. But it just means so many things. The symbolism of still having the name, the Palace. No sponsorship rights. No naming rights. It's just a very pure thing. And then the timing could not have been better. For the arena to open, the Pistons' first season that they won a championship, just so perfect. It saw the best of the Bad Boys' days. And then in 2004, the Pistons finally won a championship at the Palace. The first two, the titles came on the road. Definitely some big games on the way there. But to win that one at the Palace in 2004, the place was rocking. The Lakers didn't know what hit them. The Pistons split two in L.A. Everybody kept waiting to see when the Lakers would wake up. These were the star-studded Lakers. Shaq, Kobe, Karl Malone, Gary Payton, and they just couldn't keep up with the Pistons. The energy in the Palace those nights was incredible, unlike anything I've ever seen there. The fans knew, maybe the players knew, but nobody else nationally knew what was coming, and I'm not even sure all the fans did, and to be quite honest, I'm not even sure all the players did. But this was a team that had so much momentum, and the crowd felt it. Whether they knew or not that this team could beat these Lakers, the crowd felt it in a way that was subconscious and fueled that team to victory. It was so easy to play there for that 2004 team. And of course, there were the big games. The biggest shot, maybe. Chauncey Billups hitting a half-court three-pointer against the Nets in the playoffs. A lot of people don't remember. The Pistons ended up losing that game in triple overtime. But that was the big shot. The biggest game, maybe that clincher, just in terms of what happened within the game, within the flow of the game, maybe that clincher against the Pacers in 2004, what turned out to be a much tougher series than the 2004 finals. Rip Hamilton running around screen after screen, taking a flagrant foul from then Ron Artest, making the free throws, leading Detroit to win in that very physical series, very physical, defensive-minded series. If that went back to Indiana, who knows? Who knows what would have happened? But the Pistons won in Auburn Hills in front of a crowd ready to see them go to that next level. One of the most underrated games and series in Palace history. 2002, Pistons-Raptors in the first round. The Pistons hadn't won a playoff series since the Bad Boys. Going well over a decade, all the way through the Teal era. Just a real down time for the team. It seemed like finally this was a breakthrough team. The Pistons won 50 games. They got a high seed in the playoffs. They had home court advantage. They won the first two games against the Raptors. One of them easily, one of them not so easily, but the Pistons looked in control, up 2-0 in the best of five series. All of a sudden, the Pistons go back to Toronto, drop two in a row, come back to the Palace. Corliss Williamson saves the series. Shot 10 of 15. The rest of the team's shot 38%. Koyce Williamson was at 67%, led the team in scoring by a healthy margin. Pistons won that series in five games, winning every game in the Palace, losing every game away. They needed the Palace. The Pistons needed the Palace in that series. They needed that home court advantage. They weren't as good as their record looked. This was a team full of hardworking, tough, energetic players. Ben Wallace, Chucky Atkins, Corliss Williamson, John Barry, Michael Curry, but not the most talented. But this was a breakthrough series for the Pistons in their climb upward, showing that they could do it, that they were one of these teams that could reach the next round. I think there's a huge difference between the first and second round of the playoffs. The attention on the second round is magnified so much. You go from 30 teams to 16, okay. There's a little more attention. The playoffs are a big deal, but there are still games every night, multiple games, a lot of nights. You get down to the final eight, people are paying attention. People know who you are, and that's what changed for the Pistons, and they needed the Palace to get there. And then Joe Dumars got them to the next steps. He traded for more talented players. Richard Hamilton signed Chauncey Billups. Tayshaun Prince finally got a bigger role, traded for Rasheed Wallace. That was necessary too. But if the Pistons didn't have the Palace and their home court advantage and were playing somewhere else, who knows what would have happened? The Palace meant a lot for people who designed stadiums. It was well ahead of its time in numerous ways. The biggest, lower suites in the lower bowl. Might not apply to a lot of us. A lot of us might not get to enjoy those. But teams want to have those available. They want to have that for their high-end sponsors, for their high-end ticket buyers. And everybody copied that around the league. Palace was so far ahead of its time in most ways. Here's one way it was not, or maybe on your depending on your perspective, this was great. The Palace is the, right now, the arena, I think the consensus is, with the smallest visiting locker room. I can tell you personally, it's cramped in there. There is no room. Everybody's walking on top of everybody. It was neck and neck with Sacramento. The Kings opened their new arena this year. The Palace now is the last one with this tiny, tiny visiting locker room. Away players will remember the Palace for that. Home players will remember it for just being a good venue. I think fans will remember it for being a good venue. Not exceptional unless you had those lower end suites, I don't think. Not exceptional anyway, but very good in every way. Good views, good concourses, good parking right there. Yeah, the location might not have been great for everybody, but there is no location that'd be perfect for everybody. Going to Detroit next year will be nice for some fans. For other fans, it's going to be more of a schlep than they want. But here's what I ultimately think is the lasting legacy of the Palace. You wanted to be crowned, you had to go through the Palace. When Michael Jordan was trying to ascend to be the best player in the NBA, he had to beat the Pistons in the Palace. 1990, Pistons-Bulls Eastern Conference Finals. It went seven games. The home team won every one. Bulls did not win in the Palace. Jordan wasn't ready, but he finally got through. He finally got there and became the greatest player of all time, but he had to go through the Palace first. 2006, LeBron James, Pistons Cavaliers, home team won the first four games. Pistons eventually won in seven, winning that game seven at the Palace. LeBron wanted to become one of the best ever. Maybe he'll become the best ever, but to get into that conversation, first, he had to go through the Palace. 2007, he did in a tear. He scored 25 straight points for the Cavaliers, lead them to a big victory over the Pistons on the way to the finals. Yeah, LeBron was still young. He wasn't ready. He didn't know how to harness all his talents yet, but he had never put them on full display like that. That was the start of LeBron as we know him as a transcendent player. Going from somebody who's very good, looks like he could get there, showing all this talent, all these signs, all these great things. But that was the first time we saw him truly transcendent. When you talk about LeBron as the all-time great, or among that in that conversation, they're going to show highlights from him at the Palace. They're going to show highlights of Michael Jordan to compare him at the Palace. And even for the NBA as a whole, for the NBA to ascend to the crown of being the most popular sport in America. And it's not there yet. The NFL is still the top league, and maybe the NBA will never get there. But there are some encouraging signs for people who follow this, that the NBA is going to become the premier league in America, past the NFL. For the NBA, it had to go through the Palace. the lowest moment at the Palace, maybe the lowest moment for the NBA, the brawl, the malice at the Palace with then Ron Artest and some Pistons fans. That was the start of the league recovering, of finding a new identity. That was the low point for sure post-Michael Jordan. The league was so popular with Michael Jordan, didn't really know how to find its way after that. And then came this low point. It isn't always pretty. How the league has reacted hasn't always been perfect. But there has been a renewed sense of how to market the league, how to showcase these players, the responsibility of the players to be partners in that, where this league, the league is on this upward track. There's some tension with it. The dress code was the most immediate visible step that followed, the good and the bad of that, the way it brought a respectability to the players for some people, the way it trampled on the rights of players a little bit for some people, but it helped take the league to this new era. For better or worse, it all came through the Palace. That'll end tonight, and I think a lot of people are happy the Pistons are moving downtown. Whether they're Pistons fans or not, whether they live in the city of Detroit or not, anybody around here has a pride in the city of Detroit. They want to see Detroit do well, at least in theory, if nothing else. And so they view it as the right thing that the Pistons are going downtown. There is going to be more civic pride in that. Now, if you've listened to this podcast, you've known many times that I don't think that civic pride is worth the hundreds of millions of dollars it costs to build this arena when you could have maybe gotten the billionaire owners to build it, because they're going to get more than civic pride. They're going to get dollars in their pockets out of this in a way that I don't think the city is. But there will be this pride that the Pistons are back downtown. And here's all I have to say to that. For everything the Pistons accomplished at the Palace, for everything the Palace meant to this area, to the NBA, to everything, I think there already ought to be a lot of pride for it. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audioboom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is David Locke, founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thanks so much for tuning in to your favorite Locked On podcast. We have something really special going on here. We are the only daily local podcast format in the country, and we are one of the only places for local companies to be able to advertise on a podcast serving the fans, the listeners that want your product locally. No other podcast network does this for you. And that's why we want you to advertise right here on your favorite Locked On podcast. Our audience is 98% male. It's about 77% between the ages of 25 and 54, and also 77% between 18 and 44. So you're hitting the core demographic. If your company wants men 25 to 54 or 18 to 44, then you should advertise right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We'd love to have you. Our rates are reasonable. It's all based on the amount of listens. So you can email me, David Locke, at dlock09@gmail.com, or contact your host. We'd love to have you aboard, joining in with the great success that we're having on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.